So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Did the Vatican issue a cool new rule forbidding the blessing of people who identify as gay and transgender? I don't know about you, but that's what some people are saying. I'll touch on this later on during the show. I'll give you the answer and what's really going on here. Coming up, the story of a Chinese labor camp survivor who sees the same socialism she escaped from in China creeping into the United States. If you have a question and you'd like to join the conversation today, the number's 1-888-914-9149, or reach out on social media. You can find me at relevantradio.com/trending to connect. So I had a really, really scary moment earlier today. I take pride in the fact that I don't scream at the sight of a bug. Don't get me wrong, I can't stand spiders. But a bee landed on my baby's face when we were sitting outside today, and I shrieked and of course didn't go swatting at her face, but kind of did a quick deep breath swipe. Oh my Lanta. It was one of those moments where, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I don't scream at the sight of bugs. They don't freak me out. And then all of a sudden the bee is on your child's face and you panic. That was me today. So we're watching this show, yesterday, listening to how Dr. Carrie Gress was referring to women as someone who has the ability to nurture something, someone who has the ability to hold things, and how in the history of language, often things that contain items such as ovens and ships had gendered language, female language. And I thought this was fascinating because Karen sent me right after that a TikTok talking about how women still gather all of their things when they get out of the car, even though we have purses. And there's this video of this girl getting out of the car and she's grabbing her keys, her water bottle, her snacks, her lipstick, her wallet, and she's got this whole armful of all of these various items. It's absolutely hilarious. We'll post it on Twitter now. You can follow me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. It's a TikTok video. It just made me crack up because it's like, isn't this what we have purses for? And just all to get inside the house. But what's hilarious when we really think about it is I think this touches on how, as women, we like to be prepared to take care of ourselves and to take care of others. Sometimes we get a little stuck up on the idea of taking care of ourselves when it's really meant to go out and help other people. I'm thinking of a really funny story. So my parents could tell you, since I was a little kid, I used to always love to take everything I have and own out of the house with me. I remember we went to the Redlands Bowl one time and I took all my toys and all my things, all my blankets. I had this like suitcase of things that I took just to sit there during the show. And when I started traveling and going to summer camps, I was always glad when I didn't have to fly because that meant I could take anything I wanted and I'd have my entourage of people helping to carry my things in. Well, I learned a lesson when I went to Europe that you really had to learn how to pack light, and I'm much better now. But I'll never forget, this is where it goes wrong. You know, you have all this stuff and it shows that I was preparing to take care of myself and not other people. Someone's like, I'm at a summer camp. I really need a pair of nail clippers. And it was a dude, and I'm like, oh man, like, what do you need them for? Because I'm thinking, I have them. They're with me. I should probably share them. And he's like, well, I need it for this. And I said, well, I have some, but that's really gross. And I made him promise that he would sanitize nail clippers after whatever he had to do. I don't remember. But I thought of it when I heard of this TikTok video. Hilarious. Go watch it. It's a riot to see how we still have purses, or we attempt to have the small purse or carry just the wallet. And then we still carry all of these items around the world with us throughout the day. You're listening to Trending with Timory. My guest today is Reggie Littlejohn. She's the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. They're the only organization with a network in China saving baby girls from the forced, now two-child policy, gendercide, and sexual slavery that is occurring there. Reggie, welcome to Trending. It's great to speak with you again.
Oh, thanks for having me on again, Timory. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you have a network of people who are helping families who would otherwise be forced to abort their children or have their children taken away from them, a number of other circumstances that can occur. And I recently was reading a story about how your network was able to save a little girl from this family, from being given away to strangers. Can you share a little bit about this incredible story?
Yeah, we call her Jing Juan, which is not her real name. We never use real names because we're trying to protect our identities. But she was a rare third daughter. So number one, third children are illegal in China anyway, and then third daughters are like a catastrophe for the family. So they are usually aborted or given away. But so in the case of this family, she was born into a family of extreme hardship. Her parents were vegetable farmers, and during the pandemic and the shutdown, they became in extreme financial distress because they couldn't sell their vegetables because there was no transportation. So they had all these vegetables that were just rotting. And it was a terrible situation for them because not only were they losing money by not being able to sell the vegetables, but they had to borrow money, expend money to just even get the seeds and all of that. So they were in a situation of extreme hardship. And so the grandmother on the father's side, the father's mother, was pressuring the mother to give away this third daughter.
Wow.
As just an extra mouth to feed. And they're not the only ones. I mean, there are others in the Chinese countryside where we are that were hit hard by the pandemic. And mm-hmm. so then the pressure was give away your daughter. And she actually went to the extent of finding a couple that
the
had
grandmother
two
did.
Sons. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The grandmother went out searching and found a couple that has two sons and would like to have a daughter. And what this is, I don't know about this couple, but I do know that this is a practice where because the girls have been forcibly aborted or just, you know, neglected to the point of death or given away, China has many fewer men than women. And so what some families will do is that they're worried that their sons are not going to be able to find a wife when they grow up. So they will take a girl into their family and raise her with their sons as their future wife. And that's what I think was probably going to happen to this little girl. But fortunately for Jing Juan, our field worker found out about the situation and went to her mother and did what we do, which is, you know, we are able to get to their doors and we say, congratulations on your three daughters, in this case. Girls are as good as boys, and we will offer you a monthly stipend for a year to empower you to keep your daughter. And they needed the money very desperately because of the coronavirus. And with this financial support and with this emotional support, the mother is able to go to her, to the grandmother, and changed her mind. And the grandmother said that for years she prayed to God for a grandson, but now she sees that granddaughters can be a big blessing for God too, and she admits that she never thought of granddaughters this way before. Wow. So it changed her mind. And so now Jing Juan is just a happy third daughter in a family.
This is an organic, charitable-based stimulus plan coming from the heart of individuals rather than enforced by a government. This is what happens when people are able to give charitably. This is an incredible example of that. But to see that this little girl was saved in a sense from a form of sexual slavery, you know, who would have thought that mm-hmm. the idea of being adopted could actually make you basically an indentured servant for the rest of your life. Like, you are destined just to be the spouse of one of my children. And this is what happens when Reggie, tell me if I'm wrong. I had heard that in China, because of the lack of women, because of forced abortion and the one child policy now too, that there are about 30 million men who will not be able to find spouses as of this last year or so.
Yeah, that figure, that's true, but that figure has gone up and down. I mean, I saw a figure a long time ago, like 8 years ago, that by the Chinese government saying it was 37 million men.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that was a long time ago. But then I immediately said, oh, look, 37 million men, more men than women living in China. And so I think they backtracked on that. But I actually think it's a lot more than 37 million because they said that when they didn't realize how they would get hammered for it.
Right. Right. So share a little bit more about what normally happens. You know, this was an anomaly. This baby girl, Zing John's story, is unique. She was saved because you were able to find out about it through your field workers and help give the monetary items and things that were necessary. But normally, what would happen for a second or third daughter born in a Chinese family there in China?
Well, okay. So it depends on where it is and when it is. So there are places in China where they're so desperate to increase the population, including especially the female population, where the family planning authorities will just sort of turn a blind eye and not even say anything. Okay, that is true. Then you can get to places like our area where we are, where the intense pressure, especially in the countryside among impoverished people, to quote unquote give away a little girl. So that's lucky if she goes to another family. Give away can also be a euphemism for leaving her by the river to die. Okay, but then the worst thing, and I don't know if you even want me to talk about this, is in the Xinjiang province of China with the Uyghurs. I don't know if you're familiar with what's going on there, but horrific forced abortion, forced sterilization at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party, which was just declared genocide by Secretary Pompeo in his last day of office. But third children there are subject absolutely to forced abortion and even infanticide.
And this is something we see happening in India as well. You specifically work in China, but the United Nations estimates that there are around 200 million girls missing in the world due specifically to sex-selective abortion. And we're not just talking about forced abortion, but we're talking about a culture where it's looked down upon, as you shared in Xinjiang's story, where her grandmother thought, you know, baby girl, another baby girl, or a baby girl at all couldn't be this much of a blessing. But then when money comes in, she's able to see that, okay, you know, this is a gift from God. But isn't it interesting how just a little bit of monetary support can completely change the dynamic of a family there in China in the face of so many of the pressing matters financially and spiritually taking place there?
Yeah, it is amazing, because for $25 a month, you know, you can prevent a little girl from being given away or selectively aborted or whatever her situation is with her family. And I recently asked the person who is the mediator between me and the field workers in China, well, what does this $25 a month do? And she wrote back and she said, in order for the family to make $25, to keep $25, they would have to sell, you know, I don't remember what it was, but it was something along the lines of 500 eggs, you know, 2 tons of vegetables. I mean, it was just a very, very large amount of effort and to be able to get $25 out in the Chinese countryside. So this is actually a really, you know, it's a big help to them to relieve people from just really brutal and grinding poverty that endangers, you know, a second daughter and especially a third daughter.
I remember some time ago I had watched a documentary about what it was like to live in an area similar to Xinjiang, where, you know, they're farming, they're raising vegetables, they're selling, and how the reason often why daughters are so looked down upon is that it's viewed that they won't be able to work in the same way that a boy is. And it's so sad because it becomes such a utilitarian view of the person before that baby's even come out of the womb. We are looking at, we want more boys because they're more useful, they bring more money to the family. And although different from the United States, this utilitarian attitude about what it means to be a person is prevalent worldwide, especially in China.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I really think that it grieves the heart of God, because we are, he created every person in his image and likeness. And so then to just view somebody as being, you know, how useful are you going to be monetarily is a horrible human rights violation. And it's the reason also that widows, elderly widows in the countryside are killing themselves, because they have already given everything they have to give and no one cares about them and they're destitute. And we're also saving widows, and we can talk about that. But, you know, as far as you know, God is concerned, every person is someone that he personally and purposely created for the purpose of spending eternity with him. And it's not up to us to just say this person can be discarded because they're unborn or they're female or they're, you know, disabled in some way or they're old and they already have given everything they have to give. You know, people are not just discardable like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because we'll be talking a little later on during the show about how everything comes down to identity. And how, you know, whether you identify as someone with a mental health issue, whether you identify as queer, whether you identify as trans, whatever you identify as, that's who you are. And we've kind of hit this even in the culture there, where we have this lack of identity with God, who he gives us the gift of life in children. He gives us our own identity, our creation. So much of who we are is rooted in God. But I think that even then, we see, again, this reduction to just being a tool in a culture. And mm-hmm. How is that any better than being a slave today, truly?
Well, I think that we see this because, okay, in the United States, I agree that this sort of culture of just a very materialistic view of what it means to be human, so that, you know, that there is a hierarchy. Everybody talks about how everybody's so equal and everything, but no, actually, there is a hierarchy, and the hierarchy is how valuable are you to society, as measured by your how much money you make or what you produce, and that to me is a very godless attitude. And in China, it's absolutely the Chinese Communist Party is officially atheistic. And they regard abortion as a patriotic act. That's what they've totally brainwashed, you know, most of the population. And the idea is very much you are rated in terms of your value as a human being by how much you can produce for the party. And so that's why these elderly in China are just abandoned. And the senior suicide rate has skyrocketed 500% because under traditional Chinese culture, you know, the elderly were venerated as being wise, and they were cared for with love. But the Chinese Communist Party has come in and totally destroyed that, so that the elderly are considered to be a burden and expendable.
Isn't that interesting? Because people speak so highly, and we're going to come back on this, of socialism in the young people here in the United States. And yet socialism, communism, basically the same thing there in China, has destroyed the value of the human person, led people to believe that they have to kill off their own people, and have abandoned the elderly. So I'm so happy to hear the story and the work of you at Women's Rights Without Frontiers, working in China, helping to save baby girls. The story of the little Xinjiang is incredible. We will pray for her. And I'd like to come back to discuss a story about a friend of yours who escaped from a labor camp. She's a labor camp survivor from there in China. And she talks about essentially how eerie it is that the United States is adopting socialism when this is exactly what she escaped from. So I'll be right back here on Trending with Timory with Reggie Littlejohn. And also answer the question, did the Vatican issue a cruel new rule forbidding the blessing of people who identify as gay and transgender? Dare we hope that we can live in accord with our faith? Dare we hope changes can actually be made in our lives? This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Wednesday, I'll be joined by marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. We'll discuss healing, purpose, identity, and hope, along with St. Joseph and the year of St. Joseph. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's so often to ignore the case of what's happening overseas, often we do, or we hear it, and we just kind of glaze over it because it's not here. It's not my country. It's not something happening to me. Yeah, I recently heard the story of Jennifer Zhang, a Chinese labor camp survivor who actually spoke in front of the United States Capitol in 2019. And in her own words, I want to share with you just a little bit of her story from having survived a Chinese labor camp. Listen to this.
I never wanted to live in any sort of socialism again. But here in the U.S., I'm starting to feel that it has followed me. Not only many politicians are making socialism sound so sweet, but the majority of young Americans are attracted by it. During the past 20 years, when Falun Gong was persecuted in China, the number of people killed for their organs could be in millions. This, ladies and gentlemen, are the realities of socialism. Socialists promise heaven on earth, but always end up giving you a one-way ticket to hell.
That's Jennifer Zhang, a China labor camp survivor. Reggie Littlejohn from Women's Rights Without Frontiers, doing grassroots work there in China, is here to share a little bit more about Jennifer's story and to discuss how socialism is coming to the United States and how severe the impact of socialism in China has been. Welcome back, Reggie. Let's talk a little bit more about Jennifer's story.
Well, I met Jennifer maybe 10 years ago at an event, and she is a very brilliant and humble and determined and brave person. And so when she was in China, she had a second child under the one-child policy, and they forcibly aborted her. So she's also a survivor of forced abortion. And then, without any warning, all of a sudden, family planning police or some kind of police, maybe they weren't family planning police, but authorities burst into her home in the middle of the night and detained her. And she asked why, and they said, because of your thought. Okay, so these are thought police.
Mm-hmm. This was years ago, prior to them monitoring social media, shutting down social media for the people.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so, we can go and talk about that, you know, seriously, you know, because they just knew what her, I don't know how they knew her. I think that the reason that they didn't like her thought was because she was a Falun Gong practitioner. So that Falun Gong is like a meditation group in China. And so she, and spiritual exercises and physical exercises. All right. So they knew she was Falun Gong. So that's why they knew what her thought was. That it was a Falun Gong thought. But now in China, on the social media, they can follow your thought very, very closely by what you post and who your friends are and everything else. And she was saying that she wanted to leave socialism when she left China, but she feels like she brought it here. Or that it is encroaching here. And, I mean, there are so many ways that socialism is encroaching here, Timory. And just to start is the way that the social media tech giants are tracking our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they know who your friends are. They know, you know, if your friends are activists or they're pro-lifers, or they're in favor of the traditional family, or they know if you're Catholic, they know everything about you. And I saw an article a couple weeks ago about some guy at the UN, and I don't know whether this was passed or not, whether he actually was able to do what he wanted to do or not, but what he said he was going to do was that he was trying to analyze who at the UN should be allowed and should not be allowed based on their attitudes towards certain, you know, UN things like gay marriage, abortion, and that he wanted to get rid of all people and all scriptures that would be considered to be hate speech.
Wow.
All right? So, I mean, that's a good way of just getting rid of the Bible because, you know, the Bible has a whole lot to say about this stuff, and it's not all positive, okay?
They tried to pass the same thing in California.
Yeah, I mean, so is the Bible hate speech? You know, the Bible says that in the end times that there's going to be a poverty of the Word of God. I mean, it just feels like, you know, people who want to believe and espouse biblical positions on some of the issues of our day are getting shut down. And that I don't think it's impossible that they could actually start, like, I don't know. God forbid that they would start confiscating Bibles. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're removing them from schools. They're removing them if you work for a government institution. I mean, I know people. I've had close family members who have felt uncomfortable, you know, even having a crucifix in a government office because of the way they're treated. But if you want a prayer mat, I mean, that's totally fine. And so the intentional bias by the United States government against Christianity is shocking, but it's eating us alive. And so for Jennifer Zhang to share that she's afraid of what she's seen of socialism entering here in the United States is profound. And I want to talk a little bit more about something she said, an outrageous comment she made. Reggie, can you share with us more about this living organ transplant and how she says at one point how millions of people have died in China because of this?
Okay, so this is a controversial subject, but there's more and more data that is confirming that China executes prisoners to harvest their organs for transplant. And some of the main ones that are executed are Falun Gong practitioners and Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang. But anyone, you know, a minority, but some Christians, I think, are put up for this. So there was a big tribunal in England, and I think it was like in 2018, where they gathered information from all different sources, and then they came down and said that they believe that forced organ harvesting is happening in China. And I don't know what the total numbers are. I mean, China, of course, denies it. But this is the thing, okay? This is one of the key pieces of evidence that has convinced me that it's happening, which is if a person needs an organ, like let's say somebody needs a kidney in the United States, they have kidney failure, they need a kidney, all right? Usually in the United States where we have voluntary organ transplantation, you have to wait months or years before somebody dies or volunteers who is a match.
Right.
Whereas in China, let's say that you need a kidney or let's say you need a liver. You can just schedule, they call it like transplant vacation, transplant tourism, and just say, okay, well, I'd like to come over in mid-April and get a kidney. And they're like, okay, sure. How do they get that kidney? How do they get that match so quickly?
Wow, no questions asked.
Know, right. And so what Jennifer said, and I've heard reports of this also from the Uyghurs in Xinjiang, is that when you get put into one of these internment camps, they will give you a so-called health check. But part of that health check is taking your blood. And then they analyze it, the DNA and whatever else you need to analyze, so that it's in a database. So if somebody needs, you know, a kidney or a liver and they're matched to you, that's the end of you.
Oh, and she's saying they're literally taking what they need from prisoners. And she herself was a prisoner. They tested her blood regularly when she was a prisoner. And so this comes back, Reggie, to what we were talking about, a utilitarian view of the person. The Chinese government views you for as usable as you are. And if you are useful for an organ, if you are useful for work, that is what defines you. Basically what you can physically produce for others. What can we do to help the people in China? You know, do we stop buying Chinese goods? Do we, you know, what do we do?
Well, I'll tell you something I would like people to do, which is to get behind this emerging movement to move, or failing that, to boycott the Olympics in 2022. So China is hosting the Winter Olympics in Beijing or near Beijing in 2022. And given the fact that we have a genocide determination, so So that carries legal consequences that we have to do whatever we can to stop this. I mean, China has really no business, hosting the Olympics. I mean, I call them the genocide Olympics. So what my preference would be for the Olympics to be moved, okay? And so what we got to do is look at some of the cities that have hosted the Winter Olympics over the last 20 years. Salt Lake City, did host it. I think it was in 2002. But if anybody's listening from Salt Lake City, email me, if you have any ability to try to persuade people for it to be held there. But somebody needs to step up to the plate. And so I'm going to be starting this initiative over the next couple weeks. Other people have also done this, but this is something that would be this would is
be
something
a game changer.
It would for them.
It would create
awareness and would show them that the world is very serious about holding them accountable for their atrocities.
Yeah. Amen. And it's so fascinating because there's been this hashtag, especially the last couple of weeks, of Stop Asian Hate. And this is, it's just mind-boggling that we're not talking about what's happening actually in China to these people. It's just, we need to create awareness. We need to talk about it. We need to talk about the reality, like you said, that it's documented. It's acknowledged that there is genocide occurring in China. So why are they hosting the Olympics? So Reggie, we'll be back to discuss some more of this with you. If you're in Salt Lake City, and you want to do something about this, this is your opportunity to really ponder how can we make a change for the people of China? Because just think about the sex trafficking that is going to occur in a country that already has such a utilitarian view of the human person. So Reggie, thank you for sharing the story of Zen John and of Jennifer about truly being liberated from socialism, of being saved from being given away as a small baby. You're doing incredible work in a place where it is so hard to see at times hope, but it's one person at a time. Just like we talk about here in the United States, it's saving that one baby at a time. And so it's a reminder, how can we pray? And we'll pray for these people, but how can we do something to make a difference, to get rid of this utilitarian attitude that is so prevalent in our nation? Check out Reggie Littlejohn at womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. We'll post a link to that in the show notes available later this evening. I'll be right back to discuss more about what happens when we participate in this identity culture of whatever we identify ourselves as.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We live in a culture where people are stuck between two extremes. This idea of I am nothing, in other words, what I define myself as, or being made for something so much more. We're in the midst of an ontological crisis that surrounds the issue of mental health and suicide. And it's fascinating because if you ponder philosophers who went before us, Pascal and Descartes wrote around the same time. And on one end, we have the root of relativism and this idea of I think, therefore I am. I define my own reality. I am what I think. There's no appeal to the creator, the created order, or even to an ultimate purpose. And Descartes really represented the culture's feelings at the time in this idea. But at the same time, there was someone who was countercultural, and it was Pascal, Blaise Pascal. And he was countercultural because he really encouraged us to never forget the extreme nobility of who we are, how we were, quote, stretched between two infinites. And on one extreme was this idea of essentially nothingness, and on the other extreme was this capacity of the mind, the capacity of growth in terms of who we are, the decision we make. And I think it's fascinating because we're in a culture that is truly struggling with a mental crisis, a moral crisis, ultimately a confusion of who am I? What am I made for? And I think that this hits exactly why the mental issue is getting so much worse during COVID. And we're going to tie into this because there's been this trend of people becoming more depressed, we could even say more queer, more LGBTQ, or whatever you want to call it, in the face of COVID, because there's been this massive social isolation where people are trying to find what's special about them. They're trying to find purpose when they feel purposeless in a culture that's not engaging with one another. So why is there so much confusion, though, about what it means to be a person? Why are we all just trying to define our own reality and finding ourselves miserable? I think that it has a lot to do with this ultimate confusion or lack of exposure to God. For many people, they haven't even been exposed to God. For some, they've not been receptive. They've not been open to evangelization or the faith of their upbringing. But I found it fascinating because in some of the studies that have come out from Pew Research over the last few years, it's talked about how many millennials, many young people today who are in that marriageable age, who should be having families, you know, at the peaks of their careers, how a vast majority of them, if I remember correctly, I think it was about 30% of them, a third, grew up with little to no religious exposure in their prime years of their upbringing. Those formative, shaping, molding years, no religious exposure. And so is there any surprise that there's a crisis of mental disorders, mental health issues, suicidality, a lack of morality of what is right and what is wrong? In fact, even just a lack of a culture of respect. We don't have respect for one another. I was aghast watching a video just this morning of our Vice President Kamala Harris just marching right by servicemen and women, not even acknowledging them. No salute, no thank you, no hello, for thank you for protecting me. Nothing. And I looked at that and I thought, what has happened to the culture that respected other people? To a culture that was grateful for what others had to provide. Well, when we take God out of the picture, we no longer see the image of God in other people. We no longer see the value of other people. We have a culture that won't even stand up for what it really means to be a person, for truth, ultimately. And this ties into a crisis that's happening in our culture. You may have heard that Demi Lovato kind of had this tell-all in the recent Glamour cover story. And Demi Lovato has said she's too queer to date a cis man. Now, if you don't know what a cis man, I know all of these alphabet letters are very confusing. To be cis means that you're heterosexual. You identify with your biological reality. But don't you know that you're supposed to come out as cis today? You can't just assume someone is heterosexual. And so Demi Lovato, if you don't know who she is, she's an American singer. She has come out talking all about how she's queer after the recent breakup that she went through. And I think that there's something telling about this story. And here's why. I have been written to multiple times a week over the last couple of months by parents whose kids during COVID, during the lockdown, have come out as some form of LGBTQ. A lot of it is starting with identifying as bi. And I think that this points, just like the issue with Demi Lovato, just like the issue with Ellen Page, who now calls herself Elliot Page, a problem of a lack of understanding of who we are. We're trying to make ourselves. Everyone wants to be unique. Let's talk, though, a little bit more about Demi Lovato's specific story. And if you're just joining us, perhaps you have a question. You know, I'm bringing up the LGBTQ issues. Perhaps you heard that supposedly the Vatican issued a cruel new rule forbidding the blessing of people who identify as gay, transgender, etc. I'll tell you the truth about that statement in just a moment, but let's unpack a little bit more of Demi Lovato's story. She said that some of the guys I was hanging out with, when it would come to be intimate, she would have this visceral sort of reaction. And she goes into detail, it's a little graphic, but what she comments on is how she had this visceral reaction to intimacy with someone of the same sex. And she goes on to say how she's too queer to date a cis man, that is, a heterosexual man. And I think that that's fascinating because is this contributing to this entire culture of where anything goes, everything goes, but in reality, that's not really what we want. You see, this is a problem. We take intimacy out of marriage and it becomes explorative, experimental. What happens is it exploits the person, it confuses them, and it diminishes their value as an individual. It takes them back to this idea of I'm just a tool, just to be useful to someone or useful even to myself for a momentary pleasure. You see, we want to have purpose when it comes to intimacy. We want intimacy to be personal. And someone like Demi Lovato, who has outwardly shared that she has been abused and raped at a very young age, in fact, all the more so, wouldn't she want to know that she is known and loved? That there's something to be respected and protected within her? The intimacy between husband and wife that is being used by anyone and everyone, it's not an action as simple as riding a bike or getting out of bed. It has a lot to do with how we view ourselves and how others view us. And I think that it is telling that we live in a culture that has no value for such a special act. Many people are removing themselves from the potential of marital intimacy due to this exploitive and experimental culture that makes us feel less than human. People who have been abused, people who aren't interested and they're suddenly calling themselves queer or any letter in the alphabet or bi, it's because they think there's no value to intimacy or they're not even interested in it. Do you know that studies are showing that millennials are engaging in it a lot less than adults are today. Other adults that went before them. It's because it's not making people feel more human. It's a problem in our culture, I think, that goes to a deeper root. It's interesting. I looked at my husband the other day, and, you know, everyone has to make the decision about, you know, what do you do? How do you raise your kids? What do you expose them to? And I showed him the story of Demi Lovato, and I said, what's your initial reaction? And he said, sounds like some more parents need to homeschool their kids. And I was, why would he say that? And he said, well, it's all about what they're exposed to, what they're taught, and how much time they spend with their parents in many ways. And I think that, in a sense, I see this. Maybe, and I'm not saying everyone has to homeschool their kids, although that's a great thing, but here's the deal. Parent after parent after parent have been writing me for weeks, months on end about their kids who are identifying as one of the LGBTQ letters. We saw this as a trend, Abigail Schreier, who's been talking about it in this transgender craze book and all the conversations she's had on this issue. There's a problem over the last year that's gotten worse, that we no longer identify as what we actually physically, biologically are. Why would so-called homeschooling help? Why is that somewhat laughable? Well, many kids are home, and they're recognizing more so than before that they're home and they're alone. Versus before, at least they were out doing things. They're recognizing there's something that they are missing in their home environment. We're also seeing there's something that they're missing in the culture. So many young people today have this desire to be seen, to be unique. You know, this whole culture of the unicorn, the fact that the LGBTQ community has taken up the unicorn as one of their primary symbols, well, it's because everyone wants to be special. And that's a great thing. But that specialness doesn't mean that you aren't what you are. And I think young people have this desire, and yet what they really need is they need to understand that they are unique, they are irreplaceable, and they are unconditionally loved, first and foremost by God, but also by their parents. Because the culture is not going to tell them that. The culture will tell them they are never enough. That they are just a tool to entertain other people. Isn't that what social media is in many ways? Give it to a young person, even, I would say, people in their 20s, even older potentially, but especially to a teenager and younger, they think that their whole life is a show to entertain other people. And they judge themselves based on the audience's reaction. at least when your kid perhaps participates in an in-person music performance or a dance recital, they get the affirmation of the clapping of the cloud and parents who pity whether your kid's good at a sport or good at playing the violin or whatever it is. But when we go to social media, the reaction can be dead. The insults can be profound. And so we have to face the reality that affirmation and real face-to-face human connection is so important. Being present with others, especially with young children, is so important with teenagers. We will only overcome this identity crisis if we all lean in. So many parents are saying, I don't know what's going on with my son, with my daughter, who is identifying with this new identity. It's because the world's telling them that they should be anything but what they are. And we have to help overcome this identity crisis. And so that brings us to the huge kerfuffle of confusion of the last week. Did the Vatican issue a cruel new rule forbidding the blessing of people who identify as gay and transgender? If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. This is an important question because a lot of people think that the church is being cruel. In fact, various people are presenting what the church teaches in a very wrong way, even some of our own clergy. The Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith this past week affirmed what the church teaches, that it cannot bless same-sex unions, because to do so would be to undermine what marriage is. Now, some people are trying, and I'm saying this because there are many clergy and religious who are doing this right now. They're trying to deceive others by saying that the church is refusing to bless people who have same-sex attraction, who identify as gay. No, they're not blessing the action of a same-sex union. And it's sad because what that says is that we're seeing clergy who are being unfaithful and disobedient to the magisterium. And so when you hear these stories, it's important that we're talking about it because it makes the Catholic Church sound cruel and hateful. Any person can come up for a blessing and be blessed by a priest, bishop, or the pope. But blessing a lifestyle is not something that can be done. Now, we have some rogue priests who are choosing to do so, but that's not what the church teaches. And these rogue priests are trying to create confusion. And it's sad that we even have to talk about it. But here's the reality. When we talk about this whole identity crisis in our culture, as we talk about so many young people who are struggling with, who am I? How am I unique? How am I unrepeatable? How am I unconditionally loved? Well, here's the reality. This statement from the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith has emphasized yet again behind those words that the church always affirms the person, that is, which is personal. But it does not run around with a wand of approbation for whatever lifestyle we may want to live. You see, this is a part of the problem when we fail to understand that each person is called to conversion. All of us, you, me, doesn't matter what lifestyle we're living in, we're all sinners. And we're working toward a level of perfection that is only attainable in Christ, in the grace within us. The church knows every individual person is unique and unrepeatable, even more so than we know ourselves. But that doesn't mean that the church will approve any lifestyle we live. Why? Because this crisis of identity is nothing new. The church will always hold that we find our identity in God, who is infinite, who is perfect, all-knowing and all-loving. He knows each of us better than we know ourselves. He loves us more than we could love ourselves. So how can you and I, in prayer, have a better understanding of how much God loves us and how we are loved unconditionally? And how can we help give this prayer life to others, to help them understand anytime they have a crisis of identity, to know that they are known by the all-knowing God and they are loved by the all-loving God, and that there is mercy bestowed upon them no matter what they've experienced? I think this is a message each of us need to hear every day. Dare we hope that we can live in accord with our faith? Dare we hope changes can actually be made in our lives? This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Wednesday, I'll be joined by marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. We'll discuss healing, purpose, identity, and hope, along with St. Joseph and the year of St. Joseph. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.